Whenever I visit France, I always see lots of top bottles for sale, but when I get back home, those same bottles can be much harder to find, if not impossible. That's why I use idealwine.com. At idealwine.com, I can buy wines directly from France for delivery directly to my home. They have new auctions every week, and the fixed price selection is equally awesome. Clos Vougeard, Chateau Reyes, and Ulysse Collan, as well as many more greats from all over France, are regularly available on the website. Best of all, it is simple and hassle-free to buy them. Ideal Wine handles all the customs and logistics hurdles for you and for me. Wines are ordered with a couple of clicks, and then they arrive. It is simple. Check out idealwine.com for more information. That's idealwine.com to find what you'd like to be drinking.
I'll Drink to That, where we get behind the scenes of the beverage business. I'm Levy Dalton.
I'm Erin Scala.
And here's our show today.
Anne Parent of Domaine Parent and also Jacques Parent Co. in Pommard on the show. Hello, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
Very nice to see you.
Oh, me too. It's a pleasure.
So you started professionally at the estate in 1998.
Absolutely. I took over the management of the estate in 1998 with my sister, Catherine, after my brother and my father. So we are the 12th generation. And after 11 generations of male winemakers, I am the first generation of female winemakers, which is the second French Revolution. In fact, you know, the family Parent is in the wine production since the beginning of the 17th century. The origin of the family is from Volnay, and one of our ancestors decided to move to Pommard and get married with a woman from Pommard. And one of our ancestors also used to be the first supplier to Thomas Jefferson.
Ah.
Yes, Thomas Jefferson, when he spent a year in France as a kind of ambassador, he traveled a lot all over France. And when he arrived in Burgundy, he met my ancestor, Étienne Parent. And they began to be very good friends. Étienne Parent used to be a wine broker and also a wine guide for him. And Thomas Jefferson bought some wines from him and also some vines. And when he went back to the United States to be the third president of the United States, you know, in Monticello, he tried to grow these vines and he doesn't succeed with wine growing in Monticello because it was too warm and the varieties was not good for this kind of winemaking. But he was really very interested and very curious.
That's the 1700s. And then what happens in the 1800s and 1900s? What happens during phylloxera?
Phylloxera was a disaster, of course. You know, in Burgundy, it was around 1878, between 1878 and 1880. And of course, the vineyards were destroyed by the phylloxera. You know, it was before the French Revolution. The vineyards mostly were owned by the church and the noble family. We are not from the noble family. We are from what we call the medium class family. But in fact, my family was able to own some vineyards. And we have, of course, after the phylloxera crisis, we needed to replant all the vineyards. And after the French Revolution, we were able to buy some vineyards also. We increased our family estate, which is now a little bit more than 25 acres. And 25 acres in Burgundy is not too small, but it's not too big also. Our estate is located in Pommard, so the heart of Côte de Beaune. We produce only wines from Côte de Beaune area. Two-thirds of the surface is located on Pommard and Pommard Premier Cru. We produce mostly red wines, and we have a small range of whites. And we have Grand Cru red and Grand Cru white. It's a diversity of appellation, but only focused on Côte de Beaune area.
So when did certain parcels come into the family holdings?
The two oldest vineyards we have in our family is Pommard Premier Cru Les Chaponnières and Beaune Premier Cru Les Épenotes. And some of our grandfather bought also some Pommard Premier Cru Les Épenotes but later. But in fact, we always had some vineyards on Pommard. And after my grand-grandfather, fathers decided to buy also in Corton, which is very new in our family.
For me, it's confusing to talk about the parents of Perron. You know what I mean? So
parents, yes. The translation is...
You know, it's hard to ask about your dad. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But in fact, you know, my father, he took over the management when he was 19 years old. His first vintage alone was 1954. And he decided to sell all the production in bottles, which was not the case with my grandfather.
What was the style of your father's wines?
My father, in fact, did organic wine growing, but without knowing what it was and without saying it was organic. And also now we are certified, and he didn't do that, of course. He was also exigent about handpicking and sorting. For him and for us, it's essential and it is the base of the work. You can't have perfect grapes. That's why to produce good wines, you have to choose the best grapes. So in fact, I changed the winemaking and the wine growing, but when I think about that, I think perhaps I work like my father did, but with a new expression, with my own personality.
So when I look at the vine age for your parcels, a lot of them are about 45, 50 years. So those would have been planted by your dad.
Oh, yes. My dad did a great job. He replanted also some vineyards.
When he went about planting, how did he do it? Did he use Massal? Did he get clones? What was his philosophy?
We use and he used both. Massal selection. For our two oldest vineyards, we are in Massal selections and we are trying to redo it. Right now, we are working with a nursery and with the two oldest vineyards we have in Massal selection, I would like to redo a selection on the same way. And these two vineyards, for example, we observed we have less disease and we have less death vines than on the others. So it's very interesting to try to redo this Massal selection. Beside that, we have also some clones. The last 20 years, some organization did a great job to select also the quality for some clones and did a great research to have very good quality clones. But for us, what is interesting is to try a new way. The future for me and the great challenge will be to produce good grapes, but also to resist to some diseases and not trying to go to genetic modified, some kind like that, which I'm against that. So you know that all over the world, even in Burgundy, the life for a vine is shorter than it was 50 years ago. Sometimes you have to replant after 35 years, which is unusual in Burgundy. You know, the average age for vines is 50 years old is not rare. It's normal. But now, with some diseases, some wine growers, they need to replant every 30, 25, 30 years.
In your area, it seems that hail has really increased in incidence in the last few vintages. So is that something that you have to think about in terms of hail netting or how you plant a vineyard?
In fact, you know, hail is a phenomenon that we always had. The only difference is now with the global warming, the surface damaged by hail in 12, 13 and 14 in Côte de Beaune was huge. And this is a great changement. You know, it's like here in this country, when you're talking about tornadoes or hurricanes, you know, you always had some tornadoes or some hurricanes, but the proportion now is much more. And also the intensity is higher. So, for example, we had a hail in 12, 13, 14. So we had bad luck with these three vintages. But in fact, when you look in the history, you will see that hail, you have a kind of line from the west part of Burgundy to the east part of Burgundy, and it follows the Côte Chalonnaise, Côte de Beaune, and Côte de Nuit. So to have hail, it's not unusual. What is unusual is to have hail three vintages, 12, 13, 14, and in the same proportion. The damage, we lost more than 50%, and this is unusual and it's disturbing us. And of course, we have to think about in the future these very hard and strong hailstorms. That's why we decided to do a test, to do an experimentation with gnats. And we will see what happens. But we have to think about in the future about this phenomenon, which of course did great damages on vines. But the damages made also by frost is sometimes more difficult for pruning than after hail. It will take you 3 times longer after frost to do pruning than after hail. After hail, the consequences are immediately. Of course, pruning is difficult, but for frost, it's so difficult to do because the vines will break. So you have to consider every vine, and that's why it will take you a long time to do pruning. You know, they have to think when they are in front of every vine, what I need to do. Do I need to go back in Cordon de Royat, or do I need to go to Guyot? It's 2 different types of pruning, and you have to think about what you want to do. Of course, the estate was much more in Cordon de Royat, which was for me a very interesting pruning type because it was too regular also, to manage also the quantity. But these 2 years, we have to go back to Guyot pruning because we need to restore wood in the vines and we need also to produce also some grapes. So the regulation of quantity and it's not necessary anymore after this kind of vintages. But that's why Guyot pruning is interesting, especially after frost or hail.
Basically, you have to start a new cane. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, absolutely.
Because there's been damage to the canes that were there.
Totally, totally.
I bet that kind of change hasn't really happened much in the history of the estate. There's probably few times where you change the pruning like that on a wide scale.
Yes, but we need to do it because... if you need to restore wood, you know, you need to get back an energy in vines. And that's why one time you have to take a decision and say, okay, we need to go back to Guyot. But the vines, you know, the reaction of vines and the feedback we have from vines is amazing because this plant is amazing. It will be damaged by hail or by frost and it's still alive. And it in 2 years, you can restore.
You really connect that hail phenomenon, the incidence and the scope of it with climate change. You think they're related?
Hail always exists, but how big it was, I think, of course, it's one of the consequences of the global warming. We have to be conscious about that. We don't have to be afraid in the same time. And for the winemaker that I am, of course, the challenge and my job is to adapt with what the nature give me. And I will do my best. I will tell you 2 examples. 2013 was a very fragile vintage, a challenging vintage because first we had hail. And also it was a vintage tender, not the same structure, not the same body as 2014 or 2012. So what was the challenge was not trying to extract too much, but just trying to keep the good point of 13, which was the fruit. The fruit was absolutely pure, very straight wines, but not with big body, not with big tannin, but delicious to enjoy young. So we reduce the maceration on skins. We reduce also the proportion of new oak because this vintage was not able to support and to integrate a high proportion of new oak. But in the same time, now you will open 2013 and enjoy immediately. It's not a vintage to age too long. And I always used to say that you don't have bad vintages. You just have bad winemakers or bad bottles. If you're a serious winemaker, you will produce good wines, excellent wines. Even the nature was not so perfect as 2005 was or 2015. Even the nature was not so concentrated as 2003 or 2014 was. So you just have to adapt your winemaking by what the nature will give you and not trying to do the same every vintage.
Because you told me you had destemmed 12, 13, 14, but then you used some whole cluster in 15, for example.
Yes. I destemmed 2012, 13, and 14 because we had hail. And hail damaged a lot the stems. It's like if you cut the skin, you know, you cut the stems. And After that, you can give to the wine some green taste, which is not good. So the stems were not enough matured, were not enough healthy, and also the structure of grapes, the balance between stem and berries, because it was damaged by hail. So you lost a lot of berries. So if you saw the structure of a grape, you will have a stem and few berries. So if you put whole clusters of that, you will have more juice from stem than from berries. I was not very confident with that, so I chose to destamp. In the opposite, 2015, perfect grapes, very healthy, good maturity, stems in a perfect way. I choose to try to add a certain proportion of whole clusters. It can be 10 or 20%. And for my Grand Cru, I choose to do whole clusters. And it was great because, you know, the complexity we had with whole clusters, the aromas and the finesse was fantastic. So it was a perfect example and a perfect vintage to try to use again. But for the rest, I'm not always confident with stems. So that's why I'm always very careful.
Sometimes when I talk to Burgundy collectors and aficionados, they tell me that in the old bottles, not Perrant, but just in general for red Burgundy, you can taste the taste of hail.
If you didn't do what I said before, sorting throughout the fruit, of course, if you put all the grapes, even some dry berries damaged by hail in the vat, you don't have the same wine as if you did this very strictly assortment. So if you don't do that, imagine you will put all the grapes in a vat. You can have a taste of ale, absolutely. Assortment and sorting throughout the fruit for me is essential, essential. I will give you some statistics. 2015, we sorted 0.05%. 2005, 0.5%. In the opposite, 2004, we sorted 37%. It was the price to pay to have a very good quality. 2016, we sorted less than 5%. 2012, 13 and 14, it was between 7 to 10%. But it's essential.
So starting since 98, I mean, I feel like you've seen a pretty broad diversity of vintages. There's been the ripe vintages like 99, 2005, 2015. There's been really cool vintages. 04 comes to mind. Maybe that also had other issues as well. There's been super hot vintages like 3. As you've approached those differences, have you seen different vineyards respond differently to those conditions?
You know, what is great for a winemaker is not to produce or not to have the same type or not to have these stereotypized vintages. It's a great challenge, but also it's very exciting for me. Sometimes we can have also some big surprise. For example, 2003 for me was an amazing vintage. Hot, we picked in the 18th of August for the whites at 6 o'clock in the morning. So it was very unusual in Burgundy. And we said to the people, oh, you know, 2003, Jemmy, nice concentration, etc., etc. Don't age 2003. It's impossible to do it. And in fact, when you taste some 2003 right now, it's very surprising because they lost their Jemmy taste and some of them are dead, absolutely, but some are great. And even us, we were very surprised by the potential, in fact, and some other vintages sometimes needs time. Take, for example, 2011. 2011 was a vintage between 2010, which was for me an amazing vintage, very precise, everything at the right place at the right time, and 2012. A nice concentration, a nice body, ripe tannin, ripe fruit, very expressive, very generous. So 11 was a little bit more serious. And we can say sometimes austere at the beginning. So people didn't like 2011 at the beginning. But now when you taste 2011, it's an amazing vintage. It opens more and more. And I think people will rediscover or retaste 2011 will be very surprised. So you have vintages to enjoy young. You have vintages with a great potential to age. And for me, it's fantastic because I will never make the same wine. I will never make the same vintage. Of course, I can say, oh, I would love to make again 2005 or 2002, which was one of my best vintage. But no, it's impossible to do. But in the same times, you will recognize some good winemakers not with vintages easy to do. I mean, 2005, it was an easy vintage. We did nothing. Nothing. Everything came easily. The winemaking was so easy. So you will not recognize a good winemaker with 2005. But 2004, I'm very proud. And I'm much more proud of my 2004 than 2005. Same with the vintages we had with Hale, because it was not easy. Because when you have, in 2 minutes, all your production destroyed by Hale, when you see my team, they work very hard in the vineyards and they were crying because it was impossible to see your work destroyed in a few minutes. That's awful, you know. So we were very proud to see the result and the quality of 12, 13 and 14. And same with 16. 16, we had this bad frost in April, but the quality is here.
It's like they, what they say, good red Burgundy is a wine of triage.
Oh, yes. Yes. And also, you have to consider the weather forecast to determine the date of harvest. The most difficult decision to take for me is to determine the date of harvest. And some vintages, it's easier to do. Some other, sometimes, in 1 or 2 days, you know, you have to take the decision not to pick too late because you can be overripe, especially for whites.
I can imagine that the weather reporting is probably better now than it was in the late 90s.
Absolutely. The weather forecast, we have some special local informations about the weather. We have a lot of informations, but nothing will replace your own decision because you know yourself, your vineyards. So you have also to know which one will be earlier in advance, which one will be a little bit later, etc., etc. So, of course, it is the most difficult decision to take is to determine the date of harvest.
How do you see those vineyard expressions of Pommard? I mean, when you taste those wines and you know what that vineyard site is like, what shows in Epinot that doesn't show in Rougen, for example?
In Pommard, you have two parts. In fact, the premier cru are divided in two parts. The northern part between Pommard and Beaune. The best known premier cru of Pommard on this side is called Pommard premier cru Les Epinots. Here, the soil is more clay, fine clay. At the bottom, you have the limestone, and on the surface, you have different parts of clay. For me, the premier cru produced in this part are more the finesse, the elegance, the complexity. You have the structure, but you have also this long finish, this precision, the silky tannin. On the southern part, between Pommard and Volnay, here you have the second best known premier cru, which is called Pommard premier cru Les Rugiens. The soils are in two parts. When you go in the direction of Volnay, you have a big part of limestone. But when you're close to Pommard, you have brown clay, you have clay with iron oxide, a big part of iron oxide. Here, the wines have a certain character and personality, a great body, the feet in the land. Both come from the same appellation. Both are the same level of quality, premier cru. But you have totally different expression. Some are more generous or expressive than some others. You have some premier cru a little bit shy at the beginning, but they open more and more, and they have a kind of distinction. Les Epinots, for me, Pommard premier cru Les Epinots is certainly the high fashion of Pommard, the most mysterious premier cru. Pommard premier cru Les Rugiens is certainly the biggest Pommard, very masculine, with a great potential to age. So some people said, oh, Pommard has the finesse, the elegance, but Pommard can be also very masculine. It's true. It's absolutely true. And what is also very special in Pommard is it's only a red wine. We don't have a white Pommard. And we don't have a Grand Cru, not yet. Not yet, because we are trying to upgrade Pommard premier cru Les Epinots and Pommard premier cru Les Rugiens. Historically, these two premiers crus were proposed in the classification of Grand Cru. But in 1935, when the French organization decided to do an official classification, the wine growers from Pommard, they didn't agree. Some of them agreed with that, and some of them were afraid to be classified in Grand Cru because you had to pay a lot of taxes. And the average production was also lower than for Premier Cru. So in fact, the French organization, INAO, said, okay, some part of you agree, some part of you not, so we will wait. And in fact, we didn't propose, again, the classification in Grand Cru. So 5 years ago, we decided, with the wine growers of Pommard, to propose and to try to upgrade these two Premier Cru in Grand Cru. It will take a long time. It's a long process. We are not sure to obtain this classification in Grand Cru, but I think definitely Pommard deserves a Grand Cru.
There's not so many Grand Crus in red in the Côte de Beaune, really.
In Côte de Beaune, the only Grand Cru red is Corton. And Corton is the only Grand Cru in Burgundy to be both red and white. Mostly of the Grand Cru white are in Côte de Beaune, mostly of the Grand Cru red are in Côte de Nuit, but it's not fixed. I mean, why we can't have one more Grand Cru red in Côte de Beaune? Why we can't upgrade some village level in Premier Cru, like the southern part of Burgundy are trying to do it, Saint-Véran, etc., in the Mâconnais, they are trying to have some Premier Cru level. It's normal, but we have to see, and the price of the land will be also different.
So, Pommard Épinot, I've seen other people bottle Grand Épinot, which is kind of a smaller slice. So, you blend Petit Épinot and Grand Épinot into an Épinot, and why do you make that choice?
In fact, we choose to blend Les Grands Épinots and Les Petits Épinots. We have both, about 50% of each. And my grandfather decided to do that because he considered if you have Grands Épinots on a label, it's great because grand means big, great, and petit means small. So in the mind of the people, you know, petit is not the same quality as grand. And for us, it was not interesting to divide and to have two different premier cru of Les Épinots, grand and petit. So that's why we decided to blend both. But I should say that we do a separate analysis for the maturity. We observed these two vineyards. And mostly of the time, I found Petits Épinots as a touch of something better than Grands Épinots. That's why we decided to blend.
And it's interesting because you have the same name of a cru, but in two different villages. So you have a Beaune Épinot and a Pommard Épinot.
In fact, we have Beaune Premier Cru Les Épinots. And Les Épinots means the feminine touch, the feminine translation of Les Épinots. It's the same etymology, but the soil is different because you have one step lower for the Beaune. And Les Épinots has this very fine clay. Beaune Premier Cru Les Épinots. Beaune is usually more feminine than Pommard, but because it's very close Pommard, this Beaune Premier Cru, Les Épinots, has something that you can find again in Pommard, a certain body, a certain structure, but it doesn't have the same distinction as Pommard Premier Cru, Les Épinots. When you see in the geology, you have a step lower for Beaune. In Beaune, you have a deeper clay, a deeper soils than with Les Épinots. Mostly of the time, the clay will give you the finesse and the elegance, and limestone will give to the wine the structure, the body.
So it's less close to the bedrock.
Yes.
No, that makes sense. And then back to Pommard for a minute, for Rougen. I mean, I hear people say that the part closer to the road is a little different than the part further in. And is that true, or do you find differences within Rougen as a cru?
Rougien Bas is the best, of course. Yes, the Rougien Bas is the most interesting premier cru of Les Rougiens, definitely. Yes. It has this kind of intensity, depth, and the aging potential is great. It comes from the soil. And the soil, as I said, is brown clay, but with iron oxide. And Rougien means rouge, which is in French means red. And red because it comes from the color of the soils, and especially this kind of iron oxide you find in Les Rougiens.
The other premier crus of Pommard, or the other Ludis of Pommard that you make, do they divide up into those two camps? Is one more
yes.
to the north?
And yes. For example, on the northern part, we have Pommard Premier Cru Les Argilières, Pommard Premier Cru Les Épinots. We have also Pommard Premier Cru Les Arvelais, Pommard Premier Cru Les Pézerolles. On the other side, we have Pommard Premier Cru Les Chaponnières, Pommard Premier Cru Les Croix Noires, Pommard Premier Cru Les Chanlins. So it's really two parts and two different characters and personality.
So if I were looking for something like Rougen, but I wanted to try something different, the Chaponnière would be...
Chaponnière will be great. Chaponnière, for me, is the most generous premier cru. Very expressive, it's very friendly, and a wine with a great sensuality. You know what I mean? A great sensuality. Really, it will take you in its arms. For me, it's, I can say my favorite premier cru with Les Épineaux, definitely. Apart, it's 79 years old. It's interesting to see the soil and to see how healthy for a 79 years old vine it is.
It was difficult for me to get a grasp on Pommard when I was younger and trying to learn about the region because I thought of it, well, it's a Côte de Beaune red, kind of like Volnay, so it's more elegant and lighter. And I would find wines that were like that, which it seems like what you're saying is that those are in the northern sector. And then I would find other wines that were meatier and bigger and broader and darker, more intense. So I had a hard time understanding what I was getting into sometimes, whereas I found Volnay a little bit more consistent, more on the elegance, more on the red fruit. And so learning about Pommard has been a little bit of a challenge for me over my career, to be honest with you.
What is fascinating in Pommard is this two expression. It can be a very serious wine, but it can be a very delicate and with a great finesse and elegance. So, of course, you can find some comparison with some other appellations, like for the finesse, Chambolle-Musigny, for example, for the structure, Gevrey-Chambertin. The diversity and the richness is not a handicap. For me, it's a great advantage, and you will never stop to learn about Burgundy and about appellations like Pommard. What is really special also in Pommard is the structure of the fruit. The fruit also expression is more on big, juicy cherries, for example, and will be also with a touch of spiciness. And this is really from Pommard. The spiciness you can find in Pommard is always observed by many people who taste a lot of Pommard. We used to say Volnay is more elegant and Pommard is more full-bodied. But in fact, also, you can find these two expressions on the two villages.
Another appellation where you have some diversity and you're kind of showing the appellation through different prisms is Corton, because you make red Corton and white Corton from different parts of the hill.
Our two Cortons are located on the top of the hill of Corton, but on the top of the village called Ladouas-Sérigny. You know, the hill of Corton is located on three villages, Pernant-Vergelès, Allos-Corton, and Ladouas-Sérigny. Mostly of the whites are located, Corton-Charlemagne is located between Pernant-Vergelès and Allos-Corton. But our white, for example, comes from the lieu-dit called En Rognier et Corton. And it's on the top of the hill, but on Ladouas side, on Ladouas-Sérigny side. So that's why it's very rare, because it doesn't come from mostly of the Corton Charlemagne. If I have the right to put Corton Charlemagne on the label, but I don't want to do it because for me it's not logical, and it's more rare and more normal to put Corton white. The Corton red comes from a part called Les Renards. Les Renards means the female fox, and you can always find a touch of wildness in this Corton. The soil of Corton is limestone, but it's much more than limestone, it's rocks. Behind the hill of Corton, you find a lot of quarries, so you can imagine also the constitution and the structure of the hill of Corton. You don't have a big part of earth, you're immediately on stones, on rocks. That's why this wine has great structure. But for the red, you have a bigger part of clay on the surface.
When you're tasting a Corton Charlemagne and you're tasting your Corton Blanc, do you see differences of expression from where it is on the hill?
The Corton white has more tension, is more vibrant, and not the same richness as Corton Charlemagne. It can be a little bit austere at the beginning, but it opens more and more, and it has a great complexity. And a long finish, a long length. You can find also on Corton white a little bit touch of saltiness. My father decided to replant Corton red, and he decided to replant in white. It was in 1990. He decided to replant because he considered the soil was much better for white than for reds. And he was absolutely right. But in the opposite, the red, Les Renards, I think will be not good for whites. It's perfect for reds.
Renard is one of the most famous of the Corton red Ludis. So how would you compare it to some of the other Ludis?
Les Renards, the name is absolutely the truth. The wildness, the Renard, the female fox. a touch of animal. If you taste an old Corton, you have this touch of animal. Very meaty, a nice intensity. The fruit is always dark, very intense. It integrates very well the new oak. You can age very long Corton. So Les Renards, for me, has really very subtil, but with also a touch of wineness. Needs more time than some other Corton that you can enjoy younger.
When the wines go to market, are there certain wines that you recommend drinking a little sooner or certain bottlings you recommend drinking
Absolutely.
A little later?
Some Premier Cru, for example, like we said, Pommard Premier Cru Les Epenaux and Pommard Premier Cru Les Rugiens are Premier Cru to age longer than the others. And in Premier Cru, you have Les Argilières, which is always very well open, that you can enjoy younger.
Since taking over in the late 90s, you've seen a lot. What's the next step for Paron?
Our next step is we are very interested to buy some vineyards, not only in Côte de Beaune, but in Côte Chalonnaise. Also, we would like to build a new cuvée. We are waiting for the next generation. They are at school right now. They are students or they live their life. But we expect to have one working with us.
The forefathers of Anne Parent moved from Volnay to Pommard to build a new house, and now she's waiting for the next generation. Thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Anne Parent of Domaine Parent in Pommard, as well as Jacques Parent Company. All Drink to That is hosted and produced by myself, Levy Dalton. Aaron Scala has contributed original pieces. Editorial assistance has been provided by Bill Kimsey. The show music was performed and composed by Rob Moose and Thomas Bartlett. Show artwork by Alicia Tenoyan. T-shirts, sweatshirts, coffee mugs, and so much more, including show stickers, notebooks, and even gift wrap, are available for sale if you check the show website, alldrinktothatpod.com. That's I-L-L, drinktothatpod.com, which is the same place you'd go to sign up for our email list or to make one of the crucially important donations that help keep this show operating. You can donate from anywhere using PayPal or Stripe on the show website. Remember to hit subscribe or to follow this show in your favorite podcast app, please. That's super important to see every episode. And thank you for listening.
When you see the etymology of the name Pommard, the name Pommard comes from Pomona, the goddess of fruit, and Pomarium, which is in Latin, means the orchard. So you can imagine the richness of this village and this appellation.